So welcome to the second lecture this week on virtual machines. So where did we stop? So we considered the case of trying to translate LETREC constructs, which means simultaneously recursive definitions. And the idea was, in general, that we may, or the problem which we envisioned was that in a mutual recursive definition, you may refer to a variable which is defined later. So this is the idea of this of how to translate such kind of things is first to allocate the objects which have not yet, even though they are not yet initialized, and then override the dummy objects by the real content. And so the allocation of the dummy objects is this alloc n, so this allocates n dummy objects, and the initialization, which means the overwriting of the dummies with the real value, is done by the rewrite. And remark here that the rewriting argument decreases over in the application of this translation scheme here. Why? The reason is that the addressing is relative to the current stack pointer. And the stack pointer is always the same, because we have this n memory cells which have been allocated with the dummy references to the dummies, and then one memory cell which receives the current value for the ith dummy, yeah, for the ith variable for yi. And now then this value is used to override the variable yi. Now, in the beginning, this is the deepest one, this is the y1, and in the end, we make progress to the last, in direction of the last variable, which is the yn, which is topmost. And this topmost variable is very close to the value which we use to override it. So therefore, the distance, or the difference, the distance between the reference to the dummy to be overwritten and the current value which we use for the overwriting gets smaller and smaller. Yeah? So therefore this decrease from n to 1. And then also this new value which is always used for the rewriting, this is always on top, a fresh value which is produced on top of the stack. Then it is used for the overwriting and then it disappears. So therefore the construction of these values for the initialization has always the same stack distance, namely the SD plus N, where the N is the number of dummies which we have allocated. So that was the important thing which I wanted to state here. And then one more thing perhaps which is important: if we construct these values for initializing the dummies, this is we use this code, we generate code with respect to some code generation scheme. So if we are in a call by need environment, then we are not sure whether we ever will access these mutually recursive functions, therefore we use code C. And if we are in a call by value language like OCaml, we will use code V. And I told you already last time, this code V makes it a little bit complicated, because it could be the case that the recursive definition refers to a value like a number, and then we have x equals x plus 1. This will not terminate, so we will run into trouble here. But if you think that we define a recursive value which is a function, then this is very well possible, because recall, computing the value of a function means that we construct an object in the heap and wrap into it the code pointer. But we do not jump into the code and proceed there. So therefore, this works perfectly well with this kind of scheme, although we would use a call by the code V scheme in OCaml. Yeah? Now, that is this code C or code V discussion for the E1 and EN. Now, for the row, the address environment, the row prime here, which we use for evaluating E1 to EN and also for the E0. So this is what kind of variables can we see in E1 to EN and in the E0? Well, it is those variables which are available in E overall, so this is this row, together with the Y1 to YN. Y1 to YN, this is the recursively defined variables or names. These are visible all over E1 to EN and in E0. And they are visible only there, and afterwards they go out of scope and are dead. Yeah? So these, therefore, must be added to the row. And now, in which form must they be added? What are they? Well, they are, we allocated them or references to them on the stack, so therefore they are local variable. And what are their relative, what is their stack, this, what is their relative address? Well, they, compared to this reference address SP0, it is the stack distance, and then stack distance plus 1, plus 2, plus 3, and so on. So where the first, where we, so Y1 has stack distance plus 1, and so on. Y2 has stack distance plus 2, where the stack distance SD is the stack distance before allocating any space on the stack. Yeah, before allocating any of the Ys. So in this sense, this is this seems to be plausible. The only thing which we are not yet completely sure about is how to implement the alloc and how to implement the rewrite. And if you have done that, we know how to deal with recursive definitions. So, but even if we don't know how to implement alloc and rewrite, we still are able to generate code. This is, as I told you last time, this is a big advantage. These, we introduce these instructions as kind of placeholders or a kind of requirements for the implementer of the virtual machine, but the compiler still can generate code for it, for this kind of thing. And here we see how the code would look like. So here is a piece of a little function. What does it do? So it's a recursive function f, which, what does it compute? Is it a complicated function? It's a simple function. What kind of function does f compute? Well, it's the factorial function, which is implemented here with an accumulating parameter. So the x is the accumulating parameter, and the y is the real input parameter. And so if this y is less or equal to 1, then you return the accumulator, and otherwise you multiply the current y onto the accumulator and call the function again with y minus 1. So this is just the factorial function in a tail recursive definition. So this would be the most efficient implementation of the factorial function you can achieve, for example, in OCaml. Okay, so that's for the example. Now let's see how to translate it. So we assume that the whole thing is translated with a stack distance 0 and an empty address environment. And we think of OCaml, so this is a call by value. So is there questions?
Yeah, I wasn't sure about the one.
At the end. Ah, yes. What is it? It's a partial. Yeah?
It's the call of the function. Before we only define the function, and then we use it to calculate the factorial of 1.
Well, yeah, no, that's the one is the initialization of the accumulator. So this is, does not run at all. So because this F requires two arguments for running. So this means this is just a definition of a function. So that if you type that into the OCaml interactive shell, then it will tell you that you have defined a function. Fine. But you can use it if you give it a name, like the factorial, and then you can call this name with any value, and this will return you the value of the factorial.
So in the end, the name of the function will be F1 and not F, like the ledger
statement. So this, is, this expression has a value,
yes,
and this value is a function. So nothing happens. So I think the output of the interactive shell for a function in OCaml is just func or, I don't know, a function or something, and gives you the type and nothing more. So you will not see much. But you could think of it as a part of a larger program. Then you could use it. Okay, so now let's see. But it's an expression, and we kind of have to provide code for it. So what do we see for it? So that on the top level, we see that it is a ledrec. And the value which is defined is the F. So okay, so therefore we do an alloc 1. And in the end, we have the slide 1, which squeezes out the local variable afterwards. Okay, and then in between, now we have, following the alloc, we have to compute the value of the right-hand side of the F. So F is this Y1. So now the right-hand side, this is a functional value, so we have to compute and we have to code V for it, for this functional value. So that means, how do we compute the value of a function? We first have to construct the global vector. What is the global in this pretty expression? The global thing is the F. Yeah? Because this is a global name inside this expression. Inside this expression. Yeah? X and Y are the parameters. They are local. But F is global. Yeah, so F is global. So now we have to know, we have to see what kind of, how do we get the access to F, which we have to wrap into the vector. Well, F is a local. This is the corresponds to the Y1. So it, therefore, it has stack distance plus 1. Stack distance before the whole thing was 0. So therefore, the relative address, I write it, the row prime maps F to L1. Yes. Yeah? So this is the row prime. There is no other local variable, no other variable visible when trying to translate the expression in the box. Okay? So therefore, L1, now the stack distance is 1. 1 minus 1 is 0. Therefore, we get hold of the F by push log 0. And then we make the vector, and then we make the funval. Now we have the value for the F, and that we, here it is, and then we rewrite the dummy allocated by alloc 1 with this value. And now there's something in between. So in between this, the creation of the funval object and the rewriting, there we have to jump across the code for the right-hand side. The code for the right-hand side is this red block here, starting it with A. Now I have not... So it starts with test arg 2 because it's a 2 argument function and ends with return 2 because it's a 2 argument function. And in between the code, I guess we have seen it somewhere. So it's just the code for an if then else and then a call to some function. Yeah? And so that's the structure of this of the how the value used for initialization of the F is constructed. And you see here the part which is when the letter is evaluated, only the yellow part is executed, and the red part is kind of this portion of the code inside our code segment, which is pointed at by the code pointer inside the F object. And it's not executed. So what is executed is this construction of the F object. Yeah? And that is kind of written into the F. Now afterwards comes the call. So that is now, let us make it perhaps green. This is this one here. So what does this call say? So this corresponds to that. This F applied to 1. So F applied to 1 is an application of a function to a variable. And now, so therefore we have to mark the stack frame. This is by mark C. And C is the first address behind this is the continuation address. This is the first address after the evaluation. So this is this slide one thing. Yeah? And now what do we have to do? Well, we have to evaluate the arguments from right to left. So that is, we have to evaluate the 1. So 1 is easy to evaluate. So we are in a call by value environment. So we load a constant 1 and make the basic value. So that's this. And now we have to get hold of the F. So where is F? Well, F is a local variable with relative address 1. And the current stack pointer, which we check here, is 5. So we have 5 minus 1 is 4. So therefore, by that, we get the reference to the F. So this is the value of the F in a call by value environment. Otherwise, if we were in Haskell, what would we have to do afterwards, after this push log 4? We would have to do the eval in order to get the value of it, because it could be a closure. But now we know everything is fine, so it's a function. Yeah? So that means this push log 4, and then comes the... So then now we have on top of the stack the functional reference with the functional value, which is to be evaluated, and then we do the apply, which corresponds to the call. And then we are done. And then afterwards the slide. And you see here, what will the apply do? The apply will unwrap the functional object, and there is no argument available so far, so nothing is extra pushed onto the stack. But so the global pointer will be appropriately instantiated, and the global pointer contains the reference to the F, to the definition of the F, the reference to this part of to this code, again, and so there is a kind of a self-reference in that, and now. But then, and then the apply will jump at the beginning of the code for the function. And the first thing which we will see there is test arg2. But there is only one thing on the stack. So therefore, the function will find, too few arguments, will wrap the one into a argument pointer, construct an F object again, and return. And that's it. And so nothing will happen, but an F object will be created. Okay? So now comes we have to keep our promises, and I promised you that we have to alloc. This alloc N, I have described it in words so often, so you will not be surprised to see what it is. So it just allocates N things. And here, in this case, if I have a call by need environment, then we know the N things which we allocate will be closures. So therefore, we can allocate C objects for it, but with unknown content or with content -1, -1 in it. So this is uninitialized. That's it. So nothing special, just that. And we are happy, so it's not so complicated. Now comes the rewriting, and that is a little bit more tricky because it is in a strange thing because here on top of the stack we have computed a value. This is the X. And here down there, if we do rewrite N, then down there in distance N in the stack, there is a reference to something which has not yet received a value. So here is, in some sense, recall, there's a -1, -1 here. And then we take the content of what we compute here and copy it inside there. So the XX moves down, while the object in which we have the dummy somehow stays there. Why is this so? Why isn't it sufficient? Why isn't it sufficient to copy the reference down there? Why do I copy the content? The address has to stay the same, yes, because we have used the value down there already. And so this means using this value, for example, we have put it, a reference to it, in some global vector. And the reference goes there and not there. And so if we copy this, the reference to the X down, then we lose, then all these other references go into the nirvana. And so they will kind of be lost, and we will make wrong things. So they will still point to the dummy, which is not what we intend. So they should point to something meaningful. So therefore, we have to copy the X. So in some sense, this is also some weird phenomenon that one always, if in languages like this, it's similar as in Java, where you have always to wonder whether you kind of copy the reference to an object or copy the object. And to do this clone thing, or overwriting is not so. Whether you really update an object or only copy the reference, overwrite the reference. So this is a subtle thing which we must be aware of. That we therefore cannot just. So we need really to update the data area. Okay, good, and that's it. So you see also a simple operation. It's a little bit tricky in some sense because you are aware of it, but at least as we have written it so far, this the dummy object had three memory cells somehow, the tag, and two, this -1, -1. But now it depends on what is the size of the thing which we overwrite it with. And that kind of must fit into this frame. So if it is more than two memory cells, if we overwrite it with a function, as in OCaml, then it will have three. And then the two are not sufficient. Then we run into trouble. And later on we will have more complicated data structures, then it could be that we have to override it perhaps even by a vector. And then it would have even more memory cells. Vector could have arbitrary length. And then we are even in more severe trouble. And this is kind of a problem which you have to solve when you want to implement functional languages with recursion, clearly. And there are several ways out. So one way is you just immediately allocate a sufficiently large dummy, which is large enough so that everything can be copied inside. That is one possibility. Or you enforce that every object which might override such a dummy is of the same length. And that is, has, for example, not just two, but fields, but say always at most three. And that means that if you want to have something larger, you have to put an extra reference. So that also one can do. So, but I just wanted to mention this problem. We will not discuss it in some sense, or we think that it is solved. It is part of the memory management to provide a way how to override such things. Yeah. Okay. Now, yes, now we have all, everything is done. So we are done with everything. So, but no, we are not. There are still two things which we have not yet discussed. The first thing is we have not discussed the Ival. So we have not really thought deeply about closures. And so because there was also this a whole co-generation scheme which I kind of just used, but I did not define. So this was this code C thing. So this we have not yet shown. Yeah. So these two things must be discussed. And once again, both phenomena do not matter for O'Kammel, at least for this mini O'Kammel thing, which I have shown you, but they matter for languages like Haskell, where you have this lazy evaluation. And where are they used for? Now we kind of, so the primary interest in these closures was for for functional parameters. Yeah, in some sense, so when we wanted to implement this call by need thing, this means to delay evaluation of arguments. But we did not only delay the evaluation of arguments, we also delayed the evaluation of expressions in lets. So that was the other thing. And in let regs. There we tried to avoid to evaluate the expressions on the spot, but instead at least said that we would prefer to construct closures instead. That is, we placed this code C, a call to this code C code generation scheme in our translation function. But now what is so that means that whenever we access a value in the heap, it could be perhaps just a closure and not really a value, and therefore we must check that the value is there, and if not, we have to trigger its evaluation. So that is the idea of this eval thing, once again. So what does it mean, trigger its evaluation? So the closure, what does the closure contain? The closure contains a global pointer, and so philosophically, it contains all information to evaluate the expression whenever we need it. So this means it must contain a code pointer, a pointer to where the instructions are to evaluate for the code V for the expression, and also, well, a pointer to the global variables in these expressions, because there these values will be accessed, and they are not kind of, we have to wrap them together with the code. So therefore we have these two pointers inside the closure, and these now must be kind of taken out and started, and the evaluation must be started inside a dedicated stack frame. Yeah. So therefore the eval, therefore, in case it finds a closure, will allocate a stack frame, do the evaluation in there, and then there is one more thing which has to be done afterwards, after evaluation of the closure. What else would you guess what one would have to do? Perhaps I draw a little picture, because so here is the stack. Ah, that was the wrong thing. Wanted to have such a nice thing here. On top is the reference, and here comes the closure. Now we would evaluate the closure, and what else? What then would we have to do?
Store the results somewhere.
Yes.
Access the closure again.
We have to. So there could be further. That's exactly what we would have to do. There are more references to this kind of closure beast because this value might be multiply used. And so whenever for the next use access for this. For this particular green area, we would not like to trigger the evaluation again because re-evaluating should result in the same value. Yeah, because the globals are the same, they don't change. We are in a functional environment. So re-evaluating the same expression at any time will always return the same value. So therefore, when we evaluate it for the first time, we can make this value available to the world. And that means we override this fine area with the value which we have computed. So it's also like an override of the dummy. Yeah. So therefore we envision that after we have evaluated the value of the closure, we will override it. Okay. So, and that is, now let's see how we do it. So here is the eval. Again, it is a complicated operation, and we therefore decompose it into micro-instructions, as I find so always so convenient. So again, there's a check. First, we have to check whether how can we find out whether something is a closure or not. Well, that's easy. We have the tag. So therefore, we check, is the we follow the reference on top of the stack into the heap, and see whether it starts, whether the tag is C. And if this is the case, then we know, okay, we have to do something. If the tag is not C, we do nothing. Yeah, the eval does nothing. Now, what do we have to do in case we find the C? So the first thing is, I said, we have to allocate a stack frame. So this, therefore, we need kind of an instruction. This is this one. So again, there is this suffix zero. So recall we had already I used this suffix zero. This was when I had a variant of an existing instruction. So there I think it was make vector. Yeah, and the make vector instruction, the make vector zero was a make vector instruction without arguments, which takes its arguments somewhere else. So here, our standard mark instruction for the functional machine has an argument A, which is the continuation address. Here we will not use this A, and therefore it is a mark zero. So it somehow takes the continuation address from the environment. And when we implement this mark zero, we will check, we will a little bit think how we get the continuation address. Yeah, and then there is the push log 3. That is something which we know. And that is, for some reason, we will copy the reference. And then we have the apply 0, which applies. So this is a special variant of the apply. So now, how can what are these? How are these three instructions best to understood? So the first, the key idea is that evaluating a closure is like calling a parameterless function. So this means we have to allocate a stack frame, but we do not have to allocate parameters. We directly have to push a reference to the code. And we have to kind of do the reference to the we have to push a reference to the function this is the reference to the closure itself. This corresponds to this push log 3. Why? Now again, we may wonder why push log 3. Well, the mark has allocated 3 memory cells, so the push log 3 will then so the stack pointer has increased by 3, and we kind of subtract 3. So this gives us the reference before the on top of the stack before starting with allocating the stack frame. So this is the reference to the closure. Yeah. So we have the reference to the closure, the 3 memories, the 3 organizational cells, and then a copy of the reference to the closure. And this apply now. So here there is the argument. What is the continuation address, where we have to continue after the evaluation of the after the evaluation of the closure? That is just the next instruction after the eval, because there we simply want to continue when the closure has been updated or evaluated, and therefore we can obtain the continuation address just by taking the current PC. So this now, it is the current PC and not PC minus 1 or something. Why the current PC? Because before executing the eval, the PC has been incremented, and this is the right address where to continue. So therefore, the value of the PC is just then stored inside the stack frame. This is the mark 0. So here is the mark 0. Yeah, mark 0. 3 elements are pushed on top of the stack, which is the current global pointer. This is the first thing. Then the current stack pointer. This is the second thing. And then the current frame pointer, sorry. And then the current PC. This is the third thing. Yeah? This is the mark 0. So now we have explained this one. So this is done. Pushlogs 3 I have explained. This is a copy of the pointer to the closure. And now the apply 0. So there, apply 0. What is the difference between apply 0 and apply? Apply evaluates a function application, and apply 0 evaluates a closure. That's the difference. So therefore, the apply 0 finds on top of the stack a pointer to a closure. And below that, it has the organizational cells, that everything of that is already done. Yeah, here, one more thing here that I kind of did not I forgot to say. The frame pointer is already set on the topmost organizational cell. So that is important here. Now comes the apply 0. the apply 0 then kind of uses the global pointer inside the closure to override the current global pointer. So this one here, sorry, in red perhaps, this value is put inside here, and the code pointer is put inside the PC. That's it, and then evaluation proceeds. Yeah? So that means the eval does not, so it will just jump at the code wrapped into the closure. So, and hoping that the closure, that the code of the closure will then kind of do not only, well, the kind of the closure, the code of the closure should then evaluate the expression. But we have still one operation missing, which operation still we did not kind of take care of, which we should not forget. This overwriting, this we have not yet there. So therefore, the code which is wrapped inside the closure must additionally, besides evaluating the expression, also do the overwriting. And that we should keep in mind. Yeah. So that is now, so here therefore now I provided you the kind of in sequence, the operations which are done when the eval happens. So first, so this is the situation before the eval, then we do the mark zero, which puts on top of the stack the three organizational cells and sets the frame pointer. Then comes the push lock three, which copies this value on top of the stack. So this is this one. Now we have two pointers to the closure. Then comes the apply zero, which kind of removes this reference and kind of uses the content for setting the kills this reference and uses these values to initialize the registers. And that ends up in the situation which we see here, it's a little bit subtle again with the calibration of the stick. So this is then the end after the apply, and now we have on top of the stack the three organizational cells. This is a situation when we start evaluating the code wrapped into the closure, which starts at this fabulous address, and then and below the organizational cells we have still keep the reference to the closure, and we need this reference to the closure in order to allow the code inside the closure to update the closure. Yeah. So now that brings us immediately to this final piece which we require, which is the construction of the closure. So here is the construction, the code C for any expression E in an address environment row with stack distance SD. So what will it essentially do? Essentially, it is in some sense constructing a closure is quite similar. This code C for an arbitrary expression E is quite similar to the code for constructing a function object. So the code C for expression E is meant to construct a closure and nothing more. And only inside this closure object is a reference to some code. And so the code which it refers to is this one. But this yellow one is not executed at the spot when I execute this closure code, but this is executed later when somebody asks for the value of the closure. Yeah? So what is executed when the closure is constructed? This is the closure code. This is this one. First, this looks strangely familiar to us. We had a similar, as I said, the whole thing is analogous to the code V for a function. So we have to pack the global vector. That is the first thing. So we have to check what are the free variables in E and have to kind of collect the values of these or references to the values of all those things which may occur freely in E. So this is the set 0 to set G minus 1. And we have to push references to these values or to the closures for these values onto the stack and then make a vector of it. So this was the construction, is a construction of the global vector as we did for functions. Okay, so then we have that, and then we can pack the closure given we know the address where the code is. But the code is in this yellow area and we give it a label A. So therefore, following the construction of the global vector, we can construct the closure and wrapping inside additionally this address A. And then we are done. Then the closure is constructed and we continue after at address B. Therefore, we make a direct jump to B. We do not execute this yellow part because this is only executed when somebody asks for the value of the closure. Yeah. So this yellow part is kind of the laziness. This is the code which we try to delay as much as possible and hopefully as long that nobody ever will evaluate it. Okay. So, and once again, now we have to kind of note an important, very important point that we have two address environments. This row is the address environment outside the E, with which we arrive at E. Yeah? So this is necessary in order to construct the global vector. And then we have the address environment which is responsible later when we evaluate the E. This is down there. This is the row prime. The row prime is different from the row because at the point in time when we evaluate the E, the local variables which have been on top of the stack, in the stack at construction of the closure are long gone. But these we have wrapped into this global vector. So therefore, now all this row prime is kind of records the information which global variable has which address. So this row prime only contains global variables, only contains the globals and gives them successive relative addresses. Yeah, that is the row prime with which which kind of gives relative addresses or tells us how can we access the free variables in E, and this is necessary for the code V, when we do code V for the E. One more, perhaps it's not surprising, but it is instructive. So we construct the code V, but inside the code C, we have the code V. And this must be, yeah, because we construct the closure for now, but later we want to evaluate it and we have to prepare for it. So the code C cannot go without the code V. Okay, and one more thing, so that now I have explained to you this one, and now stack distance 0. Why stack distance 0? Well, code V is called when from the eval. The eval will jump into it. And this means a fresh stack frame has been allocated. And so then the frame pointer is at the topmost organizational cell and no parameter is there. And then directly we start with stack distance 0. Yeah. So therefore stack distance 0. That is all fine. And now you see also that inside the closure, when the closure ultimately is executed, so when this code is executed, there is one more instruction and not only the code V. And this one more instruction is a new one, which we have not yet seen. And this is this update. But I kind of told you already 5 minutes ago, we require this update because we have computed the value fine, but we now have to put it in place we have to update the reference, not the reference, but the closure itself in the heap to publish the value which we have computed. And also, we have to kind of give up the current stack frame. So now, this is this update thing. Still, we do not, for the moment, we don't care about how this update will ever be implemented, but we can use this code generation scheme and just schematically produce code. For some example, and let us do one of the most simple examples we can imagine, just A times A. A times A, and assume that A is a local variable, is a local variable with stack distance 0. with relative address 0, and the stack distance is 1. So these are the two important pieces of information to produce code. So now, very simple, A times A, and now you might perhaps be frightened because this little piece of program code results in a huge number of instructions. So why is it so? So what is going on here? Why is it so complicated? So the first thing is that A times we want to do code V for this piece. And actually, not code V, code C. So that is code C which we are interested in. Now, in fact, the only thing which is executed when we do code C for that is this piece of code. And then we jump across this, what is written in A, and proceed here. So that is the code C. And what does it do? First, it pushes the reference to A. Now, how does it get the reference to A? Now we see stack distance is 1, relative address is 0, 1 minus 0 is 1, so therefore push log 1. Yeah? And then we make the vector of length 1. This gives us the global vector for the closure. And then we make the closure and wrap into it A, the code for evaluating the closure, which is this green part. And then we simply proceed with B. So this is code C, and you see this is easy to understand. And now only we have to look again at this green part, which is responsible for what has to be done when the expression is evaluated. And now we see, so A has to be accessed, so we need the B code for the A. Now, B code for the A means we have to push the reference to A. Now, how do we get the A? So here, in this green area, so maybe I write it in green, we have this row prime, which maps A to which relative address? So A now, inside the A times B, this is a global. Before it was local, but now it is global. Inside, when we evaluate the closure, we get the value for the A from the global vector. So therefore it's global, and there has relative address 0. Yeah? Accordingly, we have a push glob 0 here. Then we do not know whether at that point when we evaluate the A times A, whether it is already evaluated or not, therefore we have to do the eval. And then we have to get the value of it, because otherwise we need the value on the stack. Yeah? So this explains these two instructions. And now you see one more stupid thing, very stupid. I do just the same thing again. Why is it so stupid? So push glob 0 is not stupid, but calling eval again is stupid. Why? Because we have the same reference already evaluated. So in some sense, we could keep track, if I have a global vector, which variables we have already evaluated, and then remove the evals there. Yeah? So in some sense, an optimizer could optimize away this one. And also, pushing the global and then getting the basic is also in some sense ridiculous. We have pushed it already. We could duplicate just the value on top of the stack. That would be another simple thing. Then we would also get away with that and that and use something like dup. Duplication we had for the C machine. We could use this to further improve it. But again, this is kind of a post-processing which we could kind of install to simplify the code. The standard code generation scheme would not produce it. And also, okay, that you produce A times A is, this might occur, yeah. Okay, so this is this one, and then in the green part, what I did not kind of, so we proceeded so far, then we do the multiplication, and then we make the basic value. This is what we have seen already. And then in the end, we have to do this miraculous update, which I have not yet explained to you. Yeah? So this update is the promise. So let's see what first let's see what the make closure instruction does. But the make closure instruction is similar to the make funval, so it is easy. So it expects that on top of the stack we have already produced the global vector, and then you simply construct the closure around it, where you wrap into it the address A. So that is easy. Yeah? So it's surprisingly simple. And the same is with the update. In essence, I kind of propose to compose this update operation again out of two simpler operations, which we have already seen so far. Namely, the first one is the popenv, which we have seen, and the rewrite one, which we also have seen. So by that, I do not have to create this update freshly, but combine it from two existing instructions, which I kind of use as micro instructions. So the popenv, what does it do? It kind of gives up the stack frame and copies that value down here. Slides the value three instructions down and kind of reinstalls the old frame pointer, old global pointer. And also the old PC. That is important. It also reinstalls the old PC. And only then we do this rewriting. This rewriting, we overwrite the reference to the closure with the perhaps one could do it also in the opposite direction. Make a rewrite 4 and then do the popenv later. Probably this would work as well. Yeah. So in the end, we are in the situation where the stack where the stack frame has disappeared, and the reference which was to a closure before is to a value now, and then we evaluation can proceed. Okay, is there a question? So that is the basic scheme, and in some sense now the functional machine is done. We can let it go and see what kind of code it produces. The point is that this is not what people do. So that is kind of the basic machinery, and this is inefficient typically. And we will now see some kind of few but important general optimizations to speed up and to improve the quality of the produced code. So one thing is, one thing which one might discuss, global variables. So that is the kind of the first type of optimization. Global variables, what is it? So this means whenever, in many places, when a program is run, the runtime system has to construct F objects or C objects. And that means, what is so horrible about it? Well, a functional object compared in C and in a functional language is different, in that you do not have just a pointer to something, but you have to wrap into the global things into the object. And that means you always have to kind of push the values of variables on top of the stack and then copy it into some into the heap. So this is kind of a pushing around and collecting references, making them a vector, and then in the next place you have a new instruction, you then again collect the values of the variables, put them in another vector, and so on and so forth. So you have a lot of vector constructing and pushing and copying references around. And this is, here is an example of what you do when you construct a closure, for example. You have to go for all the, you have to check what are the references in there, and then you construct this vector, and only then you proceed. Yeah, so that is always a nuisance, and in particular if you have an expression and a sub-expression. So if you have a sub-expression and construct inside, so inside the V code for the expression E, you might have a sub-expression where you again construct a closure. And again construct a closure for another, you again have to do this global vector vectorizing and thing. So what one would do is not to use always fresh global vectors, but perhaps reuse global vectors. Yeah, so that if you simply use a global vector multiple times, you save the pushing of all the references and putting another, producing another vector. Where can that be? So this happens, for example, if several expressions are translated in a similar way in a similar environment. For example, if you have a let rec E1, E2, E3, E4, then you can simply take all the global variables, all variables which occur somewhere in these expressions, and make them into a global vector, and then use this global vector for all the expressions in one go. Instead of constructing slightly similar but slightly different global vectors for each of them. Yeah? How can you do it? You could do it in this way, that you kind of construct a global vector and then push it somehow as if it were a local variable onto the stack. And then when it comes to using this vector, you just instead of pushing a lot of locals and globals to make the vector, you just push the reference to the vector. Or if the global vector already contains, the current global vector already contains all global variables, you kind of might even think of that you push the global vector itself on top of the stack. Yeah, and these kind of optimizations will cause global vectors sometimes in a closure or in a function to contain more components than just the free variables in the expression. Yeah, if you construct one, if you have five functions which are computed simultaneously, but they differ in their global variables, so maybe, but you construct only one global vector, then in one function you have a global vector which contains more references. So this is no problem for the correctness of the code, but it is a problem for the memory management. Why? Because if you have superfluous components in your global vector, then this means that certain heap objects might hold a reference onto them, so they can, and but they are, these are somehow useless references because they are just from a global vector in a component which is never used. Yeah, and by that you may produce space leaks. I guess this is a well-known problem which also Java programmers have. If you have an object it has several fields, and you know for sure that you will only use the field 2 and 3, but the field 1 will never be used, but still there is a reference in there. As long as there's a reference, the object which is pointed at from that field will not be reclaimed by the garbage collector. So if you want to support your garbage collector to also claim this referenced but unused object, what should you do? You should write a null into this component in order to explicitly free the object there. So things, these are, I don't know, have you ever written Java code with nullifying certain unused fields? Never. You did? Yes. And there you did it in order to decrease space consumption. Did it help?
Yes. The program ran to completion afterwards.
Ah, and before it didn't? Interesting. So in some sense, this problem here occurs also. Okay, so that was kind of a hint that these global vectors are a kind of source of potential, offer a potential for optimization, but also a potential for space leaks. Another thing is closures. And that is a systematic thing, because often closures are, in some sense, they are expensive. Why? You have to construct it. You have to collect the global vector. You have to kind of wrap it. Then you have to do the eval. You have later to test it, whether it is evaluated or not. And then you have to evaluate it, ultimately. So if you think of that you pass to a function, say, the number 5. Now, according to our scheme, we would construct a closure for the number 5. But this is ridiculous, because the number 5 is the number 5, is the number 5. So why writing a closure around it, which only later evaluates to the number 5? So there's no point in writing a closure for such an expression. Yeah. So in that sense, there might be so thinking of this simple example, that one suddenly might envision there could be more examples of expressions where it is completely stupid to construct a closure. And this is not only the case for basic values, this is also the case for functions, and to a certain degree also for plain variables. And this is what we will look at now. So currently, the code C for a basic value, it would look like this. You make a vector of length 0, you make a closure, and jump to the place, to this address B. And when evaluating the closure, you push the basic value, you make the basic value, and you update. So you have 5 instructions and 1 jump, which you have to execute whenever this thing, you have a minimum of 3 instructions to be executed, namely make vector 1, make closure A, and jump B, and a maximum of 6 instructions which you have to execute. And now, in this sense, you simply replace it by code V. Yeah. So for basic value, you just construct it. That's it. Yeah. So therefore, this is a kind of optimization for basic values. Now we could also think of the code C for just a variable. So what would you do? What would code C for the variable do? It would make the vector. It would get the variable, put it on top of the stack, make the vector out of it of length 1, make the closure, and then jump. So you have a minimum of 4 instructions, and when you evaluate it, you just push the value of it onto the stack, do the eval, and update. So these are 3 more, so you have a maximum of 7 instructions to be executed for this. And now, but instead of that, we just do the following. We do the get var, because this does not evaluate the expression anyway. It only copies the reference on top of the stack. So this should do the job in most cases. So therefore, or in all cases. So therefore, we have just 1 instruction instead of 7. So this seems plausible. Yeah. Only later when it is evaluated, you will have to do an eval also. So it's at most 2, and a minimum of 1. Yeah, so that is kind of much better. So this is a useful optimization. We see we save in all cases. And now let us see an example. It looks a little bit contrived, but our scheme should work in all cases. So let us do it like this one. So it has a recursive. So we assume we have Haskell type of language. We have a recursive definition of A and B. Well, it's in principle, we look, take a close look. It is not recursive, but we can. Why not doing it with a letter egg? So A equals B and B equals 7, and then we ask for the value of A. So in principle, A should have the value 7, and the value 7 should be returned. This is when we do code V for this expression. And what do we find out there? Okay, so now we apply our schemes. So this is an example. So we, in a straightforward way, try to kind of use our schemes to generate the code. Alloc 2, because we have 2 recursive local variables, then we have to evaluate the code C for the right-hand side of the first variable of A, of B. Code C of B. So, but B is the second local variable. So we write what is the row makes. A is gets the value relative address local 1, and B is a local with relative address 2. Okay, so that, therefore, after the alloc 2, stack distance is 2, accessing the B means 2 minus 2 is 0, therefore push log 0 to get the B. Okay, then we have to do the rewrite here, and then we have to do the 7, so it's a constant, so therefore we, instead of making the closure, we make we load just load the constant and make a basic object out of it, and then we rewrite this, do the second rewrite, which is now a rewrite 1. And then we kind of have to go for the A and the V code of the A. We want to have the value, therefore we push the local the value of A. So stack distance is 2, relative address is 1, 2 minus 1 is 1, therefore push log 1. Yeah, gives the A. Then we eval and slide. And now let's see what happens. So this should be return the value 7. Okay, so here is the code. We do an alloc of 2. We push log a 0. We rewrite 2. And now you see already that something strange has happened. I go back again. So here, we have rewritten a closure by a closure. A closure by an uninitialized closure by an uninitialized closure that cannot work well. And therefore, when we at some point, when we access the value of A, then we push. So this is strange. So we get a segmentation fault, but this picture still is not right, because somehow it pushes, it copies a value, and it should kind of copy only the reference to it. So in that sense, this picture is wrong. It should go like that. And then evaluating it would give a segmentation fault. So there's something wrong here, and something wrong is somehow this at that place when we construct, we want this value here is used to override this closure for the A, but it is only a reference to something which is not yet initialized. So in this sense, this is a kind of stupid thing. We should override. But if we had done the if the code had looked differently, this code here had looked differently, if there were let rec b equals 7 and a equals b in a, everything would be fine, because then the b would have already been correctly overwritten with a constant, and then the c code for the b would have copied the reference to the 7, to the basic value 7 on top of the stack, and this basic value 7 would then have been used to override the dummy for the A. So everything would be fine if you would have taken the right ordering. So the ordering was wrong, and for this order, for the other ordering, the code generation scheme failed. And what kind of can we conclude from that? We can conclude from that optimizations, even if they are plausible, are not necessarily correct. And therefore, one must be very careful when one comes up with optimizations. So, there is also a little bit of a story. These guys in Saarbrücken, who, when they came up with this machine, they had this optimization built into their virtual machine right away, not as an optimization, but as a kind of fundamental key feature right from the beginning, and then it was inside of a project, and then there was a project review, and the reviewers came and played around with the prototypes, and so they played around with the compiler. And what do you do when you play around with the compiler? You write down the most stupid program you can think of, and let's see what the compiler does with it. And the most stupid program which you can think of is let rec x equals x in x. Yeah, so that is what you write, and that is what they wrote, and then they let it run, and it did not run forever, which you might expect, but it simply crashed. And that was, shit like that happens. That is the only case where your super compiler fails. And the reviewer immediately hits into it. And this is really, so the worst thing typically happens at first. And that is what happened there. Okay, in fact, this is really a minor flaw, because this is only this cyclic thing. When you have a recursive definition of a variable, either x equals x or a equals b, and b is defined later as a variable. So this is the only thing where this kind of optimization fails. And you can easily repair it by kind of looking at whether your let rec is of this form and then order the variables in the right way. This would, so that you, since semantically it should not make a difference, so you are allowed to reorder it, and then you can reorder it to a situation where your compiler is happy with it, and in the case of x, let rec x equals x in x, so that you just refuse as stupid code, or you just go into infinite loop for that always. Yeah. So this is the only special case where you cannot kind of rearrange that things. Yeah. So this is this is the solution here, and so that is also the solution I propose, to do this kind of little processing, and otherwise use this optimization. Okay, so now that is one thing. The other thing is if you have closures of functions. Now, function in a certain sense is already a closure, as we discussed again and again and again, and I insisted on that, and you were perhaps even a little bit bored about it. That when I always said, yes, when you construct a functional object, you do not execute the code. You just wrap something around the code pointer. And so in that sense, what does a closure do? It also wraps around something about a code pointer. And so therefore, a functional object should not be wrapped into a closure. So that means instead of doing this closure thing for a functional object, you just construct the functional object and that's it. So this again simplifies. So this gives us again another. So this code C is kind of replaced by code V for functions. You just, instead of constructing the closure, you construct the function directly. Okay. So, yeah, and that's in principle these optimizations, which are the only ones for the moment. And then we can, now we can, perhaps one more thing is required, which is what happens if we have a full program, not just an expression, but then we proceed as usual. The code for an if a program is also nothing else but an expression. At least we took this simplistic view here, and now for this expression, it is a little bit different. So the question is, yeah. So we for an expression, we could generate various kinds of codes. We could kind of construct code which returns the value on top of the stack, or a reference on top of the stack. This was code B or code V, and we could construct code which produces a closure. Now, if we have the program and we let it run, we do not want to have a closure, which kind of tells us, yeah, if you want to have the value, here is the code for it. You want to have the value. So therefore, if you run a program, you want to have the value of it, and our convention is that it's code V, what we want to have. And there's nothing on, the stack is empty, and we assume that the code, that E does not contain free variables, so therefore we call the code V for E with an empty address environment and stack distance 0. And afterwards, when it's done, when this code is executed, we receive a value, a reference to the value on top of the stack. And then we use our fabulous instruction halt, which gives back control to the operating system, prints the value on the screen, does whatever halt should do. Yeah? That's the idea. So it's, in this sense, it's very simple. And so there is still a lot of, so we are not really so happy about it, because the code is really looks quite a bit like a mess. Why? Because the code consists, it's not just a linear as we know it from C, it's a linear sequence of instructions mostly, and only some jumps for if then else is, and some calls and returns. So it's not like that. But you have, there's a code for the function object, then you have inside the code for the function, and you jump across it. And then inside the code for the function, you again have these functional objects created and so on. So you have a lot of code nested inside other code and jumping across it. And this makes this is what I would call spaghetti code. And there one, and also this closure thing is that the flow of control is, yes, at that point you do not evaluate the expression, you construct the closure. And later on, at some point at runtime, when this expression, closure of this expression is detected, you jump to this, you call the closure, you evaluate the closure, you call and then jump back in some sense to a code nested somewhere else. So it's quite chaotic how the control flows through our code. And one might wonder whether one can kind of clean up the code a bit. What does it, do I mean by cleaning up the code? Clean up means that if I, at some place, I kind of collect in some code dump area the code of every closure and the code of every function. And When I at the place where the closure is constructed, I have only the code for the closure construction, and when I have the function a code for the place where a functional object is constructed, I only have there the three the instructions for constructing the function there and nothing else. This kind of makes the code much more transparent, but it makes the code much more transparent and understandable, and it eliminates also some of these useless direct jumps where you jump across the area. The disadvantage is that currently it was like that the code for an expression is always kind of encapsulated at one particular place. There's the code C and inside the code V. Yeah, or the code for a function is there's the code for the functional for creating the functional object, and there at the same place is the code for the evaluation of the function. So you see it all close together. If you want to have this kind of local view, so that you can understand the code locally, then this is the right way to go. But if you want to have kind of a globally clean picture, then you would like to separate these code areas from the construction areas. And if you do the separation, then you kind of, it is, so when you cannot do, or you can do the code generation in a syntax-directed way, as we did, but you will not produce, so then when you have translated the E, the expression E in code C and in code V, then you kind of have cover at the same place, you only produce this code C thing. And what do you do with the other code snippet? So you have to put it on some dump. You have to kind of use an accumulating parameter where you dump all your code snippets, and then later on, in the end, when you are finished, then you kind of produce this you produce the dump. So let us see an example. So here is this code. I kind of tried to do that in a call by value, but it doesn't. I think it doesn't matter here. So call by value or call by need. It can be done in a call by need environment. So let us see how we do it here. So the topmost thing is a let. So we have to do the right hand side. We have to do the right hand side of the A first. Now the right hand side of the A is very simple. It's just we have to do the code C for 17, but it's a basic value. We just construct it. Okay, so that's the A. Now comes for the F. The right hand side of the F is a function. Code C for the function just will do code V for the function. So that code V for the function constructs a functional object. This is done here. And we push the reference to the global. This is this push log 0 and make a vector. And you see here, since we are in a code also, so this the variable is not evaluated beforehand. It's just a reference to it is pushed on top of the stack and put into the vector. Okay, and then we simply proceed with the body, with the we having constructed the functional object for F. We simply proceed. Sorry, here with the code, the V code for the main body of the LED, and this apply. This is the corresponding code is here. And the corresponding code is here. And what does it do? As usual, we mark the stack frame. Then we push the parameter. We make using the C code, but it's just 42. So it's a basic value. That is, we make just construct the basic value. And then we have to do the F. The F is now stack distance is 4. F is the second local, so it has relative address 2. 6 minus 2 is 4, so this pushes the F. And now, since we are in a call-by-need environment, we don't know for sure whether F has been evaluated or not. So we have this eval here, and then we apply. And then once we have done this, once the value of F applied to 42 is computed, we can give up A and F. This means we make this slide 2, and then we are at the end of the program, and therefore we halt. Yeah? So that's the clear thing. And the code for the F, which was kind of, whose original place was somewhere here, yeah, this has now been kind of postponed or put into this dedicated code area here at the end after the halt. And so this starts with test arg 1 because F has one argument and return 1 because F has one argument, and in between we have this A plus B. And again, A is a global, so therefore push glob 0, and we have to evaluate it, get the basic value because we have to add it, and then we get the B, which is a local, it is the parameter, therefore the first and only parameter, so therefore it has relative address 0. Stack distance is at the moment 1. 1 minus 0 is 1. So this pushes the B, which we are not sure whether it is evaluated or not. Therefore, we evaluate it. We get its value on top of the stack. We load its value on top of the stack and add. And otherwise, then we make the basic value. So that's the code. And in some sense, at least to my taste, this is much clearer than the code before, where we had kind of nested this the code for the function f inside the construction of the funval object. At least to my taste, this now kind of corresponds more clearly to the activity which is going on. So we see here, yes, we have to construct the A, yes, we have to construct the F, and then we have to evaluate the call. And then where's the code for the F? Okay, this is in this blue area. Yeah, so that's it. But now I think time is over. Thank you for your attention, and we continue here next time.